Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing.com. to register for a meeting near you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 29th day of January 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It was a quiet day of trade in Chicago, and Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing is not available to us this afternoon. We'll give you the update of the numbers as they settle in just a moment, but we won't really go through any analysis for the day. However, we'll turn our attention to trade directly. The Secretary of Agriculture is in Europe, and President Donald Trump had a signing ceremony for the USMCA. Today. We'll discuss those. We'll take a really in-depth look at the global weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and Jonathan Compass, Ag Policy Specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. We'll be here to discuss the ARC County and PLC decision, ARC-IC, that you will be making as a producer, as a landowner in the next month and a half or so, and some of the calculators that can be found and used on the Farm Doc website on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In Chicago, corn futures finished about two lower for the day. The March at 384 and a quarter, July 394 and a half, and December 395 and a quarter. Beans also off around 2 cents. March contract 893, July at 920 and three quarters, and November at 929 and a half. Wheat futures were down 6¾ cents.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're going to dive into some agricultural policy issues now. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue is traveling in Europe this week. He's trying to set the tone for trade negotiations with the European Union. However, during a teleconference he held with members of the press, he was speaking from Rome today, he was asked about the coronavirus and the impact it might have on the Phase 1 trade deal that China just signed with the United States. The question was, will it impact their GDP and their ability to buy agricultural goods?
Tom, as you might imagine, we don't really know that yet. We would love and pray for a very quick resolution and conclusion to the coronavirus outbreak, but it's already dislodged a number of people. You know that travel has disrupted. I think the last number I saw were 46 million people sheltering in place in China, their Lunar New Year. So it obviously is going to have some ramifications economy-wide, which we hope will not inhibit the purchase goals that we have for this year that way. We'll have to look at that and see. But the fact is, the honest answer is we just don't know yet, but we're hoping for a very quick conclusion.
So the coronavirus raising some doubt as to how the Chinese will react as it relates to the Phase 1 trade deal just signed with the United States, at least in Secretary Perdue's mind. Now, the Secretary, again, was in Europe. He's laying some groundwork for a trade agreement that President Donald Trump is working on with the European Union. SPS issues, or sanitary phytosanitary issues, are one of the big impediments to trade between the two nations, and the Secretary believes that if that one issue could be solved, it would close the trade gap.
My perspective is that we still think agriculture needs to be included in a trade deal. We have a $10 to $12 billion trade deficit with the EU, and we're dealing with an entity that has almost twice as many consumers as the U.S. and two-thirds of the arable land. We don't think that makes any sense. We think it should be even at best, maybe even a trade surplus based on those numbers. So from our perspective, we fully expect if we're going to have any kind of trade agreement with the EU, then that agriculture would be engaged in it. The Rose Garden ceremony where Juncker indicated that their perspective was they could not be a deal with agriculture. We're not suggesting initially that tariffs have to be on the table. But certainly the SPS issues have to be addressed, and the non-tariff barriers, which are a fairly formidable barrier to U.S. exports to the EU.
Other barriers the Secretary of Agriculture hopes will be worked out in any future free trade agreement with the European Union include geographical identifiers. The Europeans have historically used these internally and externally as a way to protect particular products. Champagne, for instance, is only champagne if and only if it originates in the Champagne region in France. While Secretary Perdue is traveling in Europe today, the President of the United States was signing the USMCA into law. That's the trade agreement that will replace the existing NAFTA agreement. I won't go through anything as it's related to agriculture and the trade agreement itself. However, I think there are some important things that took place during the signing ceremony. Here's the president thanking members of the Republican Party for their help.
Rick Scott has been so incredible. Great governor of Florida, a great, great governor. Now he's a great senator. Thank you very much. The rest of you I don't have to bother with. I'm sorry. You know the way it works in life, right? Right, Ivanka? That's the way it works in life. Trying to teach her, but she could actually teach me.
And a few minutes later in the ceremony, here's Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade Representative.
I would also personally like to thank the members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats, who worked so hard on this agreement, not just last year, but during the course of the negotiations. They also were involved every step of the way. They made this a bipartisan success. I have been in town long enough to know that listing members at a time like this makes more enemies than friends.
So the news from the signing ceremony may be more than President Trump signed USMCA into law. By the way, the Canadian government has yet to approve USMCA, and the trade agreement won't go into force until that happens. The news may be that the U.S. Trade Representative took time to thank both Republicans and Democrats in prepared remarks, and to say doing so by calling out names only makes enemies. You have to wonder what that means for Bob Lighthizer's time at USTR and for the trade agreement still being negotiated. The EU, India, and China. We're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to discuss the growing regions across the planet. Drew, I think I'd like to start in South America, work our way northward there first from Argentina through Paraguay and into Brazil. What do crops look like?
Well, you know, Argentina has just recently had some of the best soil moisture that they've had all season long. It took them forever. The growing season got off to a poor start with very limited amounts of moisture in the west and south parts of that country. And even the early corn and also the sunseed crop ended up being shrunk down because of the poor rainfall distribution. But in the past few weeks, we've really caught up nicely, and the soil profile earlier this week was just adequately charged with moisture, and crops have been developing aggressively. But we seem to have reached the peak earlier this week, and we are already starting to dry back down again across Argentina. Crop conditions are still the best they've been, but I think we have to watch real closely as we go forward through the next couple of weeks. There is potential that parts of the country may dry out a little bit more than desired, but it's all about the timeliness of rain. You know, when you're in the middle of the summer, you've got temperatures in the 80s and 90s, you have to have that rain falling periodically in order to stay afloat on the good production outlook. And I think they're going to be all right in the majority of the region, but there are going to be pockets of issue.
As you move northward through Paraguay and Brazil, do conditions change and get better?
The situation there is certainly plenty moist. Probably the biggest concern in those areas is more tilted towards the harvest and maturation of the early season soybean crops. There is plenty of moisture around. In fact, some would say there's too much moisture around. There's been some periods of very impressive rainfall that has occurred in some of these areas, not so much Paraguay as much as the heart of Brazil's crop country. The area that's had the greatest flooding, though, is not a key early season soybean production region, and so the impact of flooding that you might have heard about there is probably not nearly as great as what you might think. The key early soybean producing areas from Mato Grosso down to Sao Paulo and Paraná are in really good shape. They do have a moisture surplus on hand at the moment. There is some concern that as we go forward into February that there will be rain often wasn't enough to slow down the maturation and harvest of that early soybean crop and possibly further delaying the planting of second season corn. So that's an issue that we will continue to watch rather closely over the next few weeks. My personal opinion is they're going to do okay, that we're going to see enough dry, biased conditions periodically to get the old crop out and the new crop in.
Let's stay in the southern hemisphere, and with corn, can you check on the crop in South Africa?
Yeah, South Africa finally is getting a good year of weather. They have struggled for many years, and recently they've had a good distribution of rain, so many times better than the last couple of years, and I think their corn crop looks very big. At one point, it looked like there was going to be some reduction in area planted because we were dry there at the very beginning of their planting season, and I think they did kind of shrink the area down, but I think their yields are going to be tremendous as long as they can keep some timely showers going through February. That seems to be a very important month, but even in March. So they're not through the woods yet, but the environment there looks really quite appealing, and I think they're going to do much better this year, not only for corn, but for their soybean and their sunseed, and especially their peanut crop. Their peanut crop was like 35% of what it should have been last year because of drought.
Do you suppose that the drought, speaking of that, in Australia this time will be soon broken?
Well, I don't know about soon. The weather is becoming more normal in Australia, but after nearly 4 years of record drought, it's going to take a while to bring back soil moisture and water supply to the point where the restrictions are removed. And we are definitely moving in the right direction. We lost that positive Indian Ocean dipole influence, and just recently the Southern Oscillation Index has come back to a neutral value after being a full year in negative phase. And both those events tend to support dry conditions in Australia, and they're both gone now. And we have seen some rain already occur in the past few weeks across some of Australia. So I think we're moving back into a more normal weather pattern, but normal at this time of the year is still not good enough because it is the middle of summer and the temperatures are still hot. But I think maybe this autumn and winter there in their world will probably move a little bit more towards improvement. And there's some folks out there talking about maybe La Nina in a year, and if La Nina comes around, that usually helps to produce above-average rain in eastern Australia. So we'll keep an eye out for that.
You know, a place that's not normally on our list, but just to the north in Indonesia, palm oil and what conditions are like there?
You know, I think most of Indonesia, like Australia, has come full circle finally and become much better fit with moisture. There was a long period of time there where Indonesia was suffering from poor rain distributions, and I'm sure the palm oil production in 2020 will reflect the dryness of 2019, and the production will be down a bit. But looking forward into the latter part of this year and on into 2021, I think the weather in Indonesia will be sufficient to support a more normal crop, and a big recovery will likely take place.
Any concerns for the overwintering wheat crop in the Black Sea area?
Actually, none at the moment. In fact, it's amazing. The Northern Hemisphere in general has been just about void of any kind of threatening winter kill environment this year. The only place that stands out in my mind is Montana. Earlier this month, when we got so cold up that way, we did have some snow-free areas in that state that might have ended up leading to some damage. But no, the Black Sea area has had an unusually warm winter. It's still warmer than normal. There is snow on the ground in portions of Russia. Ukraine hasn't had a lot of snow, but it hasn't been cold, so it hasn't been much of a threat. And the good thing about this is that there's not a lot of frost in the ground in Ukraine, and they were very dry last autumn. So by keeping the frost out and increasing precipitation here recently and on into the latter half of winter gives them an opportunity to replenish the moisture deficits that they built up last year with dryness. And so their crops are probably going to improve as we come into spring and they could end up having a better year than what was expected with the dryness last fall.
Here in the United States, what do you see?
Right now, I think we're taking a little bit of a break from all the action. We've had a lot of storms, as you know, move across the U.S. We got into a little flood mode there for a while. Some flooding is still lingering. As we go forward through this next week to 10 days, we're probably going to see a quieter mode, but not absolutely dry. We've got a storm system at midweek next week, and one that's going to occur a little bit later in the forecast period. I think it's the second week of February. Both those events will probably produce a fair amount of rain and snow, so we will keep the ground saturated. But as far as big threats to U.S. crops, I don't think we see much right now. There'll be some shots of cold air that will come along, mostly in the north-central parts of the country, and most of that area should have sufficient snow on the ground to keep that as a minimal threat. There is going to be quite a heat up here this weekend from Texas to Montana, where we'll see 60-degree temperatures in Montana, probably 60s and 70s in the central and southern plains. That'll occur for a couple of days, but it will raise some concerns about the winter hardiness of our wheat crop out there, and certainly more cool air is needed in order to keep these crops from getting started too soon.
Now, I know it's a long ways north of there, but when you get to Edmonton tonight and then for the Farm Tech Conference that takes place there in Canada tomorrow, a long way north from Montana, that is, will you have good conditions?
Good conditions for me to travel there?
Yeah. What's the weather like?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, they're having warmer than normal conditions right now, and very little precipitation until this weekend. The cold surge that will eventually come down into the north-central United States will have its roots in Alberta, and we'll see some of that cold air come in the second half of this weekend. It will create quite a bit of snow and blowing snow, so conditions will deteriorate, but hopefully I will be out of there before that.
Well, have fun and safe travels, and thanks for taking me on the tour of the planet today.
Absolutely. You have a great day.
You too, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by Jonathan Kappas. He's an agricultural policy specialist here at the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Producers across the nation will be making some decisions related to ARC and PLC for both the 2019 and the 2020 crop years. So they'll be looking back and having to make some decisions. That'll be done by March the 15th, same day as the crop insurance is done. Two different decisions, though.
Two very different decisions.
Yeah, so producers need to be aware of that. You, Gary Schnitke, some others have worked to develop a calculator that producers can use. It's online at the FarmDoc website, not FarmDoc Daily, but farmdoc.illinois.edu, and people will find that right there. They're looking for the Farm Bill 2018 toolbox because that's where these things started from. But it's kind of a really cool calculator and gives, I love this, it gives percentages. What are the odds,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so tell
So thank you for saying that. And we've got this through the Gardner program, the generous endowment from the Gardner family and the Illinois Farm Bureau family of companies. We've been working for quite a while now. And it's been a lot of fun. We've been working with the National Center for Supercomputing Applications here on campus. So the team of programmers and big data and big computing capabilities. And it's been fascinating just learning our way through some of that. But online at the FarmDoc website, you can get to the 2018 toolbox where we have the Gardner calculator, which is the web-based one that you can run the payments that you were mentioning. Gary's built a variety of Excel spreadsheet tools and what-if type programs. So if you want to run that, that's available as well. And the other important thing, not only are we making the program decision, but also the yield update. So if you've got higher yields in the last few years and the calculations work out, you want to update those program yields on the land, regardless of what program you take. But back to your point on the Gardner calculator. So it is available. You can run this now. We've updated it just recently with some more recent prices, the more recent price forecasts that have come out. And to your point again, the most important aspect of this decision is you are making it by FSA Farm. It's the producer that makes the program decision. It's FSA Farm by FSA Farm number. And it is between Arc County and PLC. It is a crop by crop decision. So again, these crops with base acres on that FSA farm, you can make one decision for corn, another decision for soybeans, another decision for wheat, if you have base for all of those crops on your farm. So that's really what we're looking at right now. It's a 2019-2020 decision. You will be making it, and you'll be locked in for this past year as well as the upcoming year. But then beginning in 2021, you can alter that decision and review the programs and see which one makes more sense. And this will actually be very helpful for farmers to have a – you'll be much closer where we think prices will be. So our forecasts will be a little bit more accurate.
So farmers go to the FarmDoc site. They look for the 2018 toolbox. Shouldn't be too hard to find. And then they're going to have to register, so if they're not already registered.
Yeah, we've got a secure website, so you're going to have to put in an email address and come up with a password, and it'll send you one of these verification emails. So make sure if you don't get something, make sure you check your spam filter or whatever else you've got on there to make sure you haven't buried it and lost it in some other folder on your email. But then you're just going to click and verify. So we're making sure that the people using the tool are not robots, not bots, or not hackers trying to get into our system. This way we can keep everything secure. But pretty straightforward, fairly standard, kind of sign-in system. And then you're going to pick the state, pick your county, and you can run through the crops that are available. We've got corn, soybeans, and wheat. We've got four price forecast scenarios for all three of those crops. So you can take a high, a low. You can look at the Congressional Budget Office forecast or this most recent forecast that Gary just put in there. And you run, you're running a program simulation on our systems here. And really, we're talking, it's 1,000 runs around that price, you know, for each year. So I think we're at 385 for corn. So we run 1,000 scenarios around that corn using Gary's modeling efforts to correlate prices and yields and historical trends and whatnot. And that just gives you a sense of kind of what you said, the odds. You know, we know if it's 385, there's no PLC payment. But what are the odds around 385, where these payments may fall, and how it looks between Arc County and PLC. So it's kind of the team at NCSA has done a wonderful job developing this thing, and I think it's a great resource as farmers sort through this decision.
So when you use the calculator, the easy stuff is state, county, crop, the reference price pops up automatically for that. You can choose the forecast model, and everybody will try to run them all. And then you get to that PLC payment thing.
Your program yield. Your PLC program yield, which you've got on the books already, but you could have updated or can update that.
Is it the same as APH?
It is not the same as APH. This is your FSA program yield. So it's not an APH. It's not a crop insurance yield, although you will use your crop insurance reported yields with FSA to update it. And we've got a tool on the toolbox to help estimate or give you a sense of the program yield. And also the Farm Service Agency on their website has a tool that'll pre-fill out the form, and you can just run the form in to FSA if you need. So they've actually done a great job of making it a bit easier for everybody to use there as well.
Yeah, so don't put your APH in.
Do not put your APH in. This is a farm program yield, and the update's really looking at 2013 to 2017 yields on that. And then there's a factor for corn and soybean, it's 0.81. So it's basically 81% of that 13 to 17 average yield for that farm. You can use crop insurance paperwork, you know, what you reported to crop insurance for the 13 to 17 yields, but you're not using an APH.
It's fun to use, and it's fun to see the odds.
You do get to check the odds, although, with the updated prices, the odds have fallen drastically for corn this year around both ARC and PLC. So we're not expecting much in the way of ARC or PLC payments for the 2019 crop year.
Hey, thanks so much.
You bet, Todd. Always good to talk to you.
Jonathan Kappas is an agricultural policy specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. If you'd like to see the ARC and PLC calculator, you can do that by visiting the FarmDoc website. That's farmdoc.illinois.edu. There you'll find the calculator for ARC County and PLC decisions. And if you'd like to run a spreadsheet with the ARC IC decisions, in the case you have prevent plant, then that's there as well. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do visit our website at willag.org. There you can purchase your tickets. They're just $30 for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's scheduled for the third day of March, the first Tuesday of the month, at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.